I'm Abby.
And I'm Allie.
And it's
About Time for True Crime.
Hi.
Hey guys, 2 years of doing this and we still can't get the intro right on our first try.
But you know what? You're welcome for the bloopers at the end, baby.
Yes. So hello, hi, and how are you? You crazy podcast listeners.
Oh my gosh, we love you so much. Happy day that you're listening. If it's drop day, happy Tuesday.
And any other day.
And Ellie and I are doing something kind of weird. We are recording in the morning on the weekend.
It is very odd. We are, just to set the scene, I have a, let's see, a vanilla bean candle under the candle warmer. I have a frozen caramel coffee from Dunk's, and if you haven't gotten it, you should make sure you get whipped cream. It tastes like ice cream. I'm not your health advisor. I'm purely just here for your taste buds.
Yes.
If you have the palate of an 8-year-old, you will like it. Abby has her iced coffee. We are wrapped in blankets from my living room.
Yep.
And we are very excited.
We are. I am feeling a bit tangential today, so sorry about it. Might be a billion years long, but I know that Allie and I have talked a lot about being makeup girlies.
Yes.
As well as true crime girlies. And we like to listen to true crime while we do our makeup and all of that. Where are you all at on, one, the holiday palettes that are starting to come out? Because I think they're wild.
They're also like early.
No consistent theme. It's so early. And it's looking like hot pinks and like tequila sunrise Christmas in July Christmas. And I'm like, where's the maroons? Give me a dark maroon.
Give me gold. Give me the fall golds with the maroon and the gold and the really nice cool toned brown to even it out. Give me the old modern Renaissance repackaged in something else.
Please. I'm begging you.
Please.
So anyway, that's new. I have been trying all sorts of new things on the face, if you will. I'm trying to get more of a range in my makeup looks. I'm really good at all or nothing. So I'm finding like a middle ground that works.
I like it.
And I like everything I've been using, except I don't like the Rare Beauty setting spray.
I haven't heard like incredible things about it. I haven't heard anything bad either. I'm just like a tart setting spray kind of gal.
It smells so good. It does. And they've got a good sprayer on it. But I was in Maine with my good friend of the pod, Emily, and we went to a Sephora. And first of all, I got like a little Merit lip gloss thing. So good. So delightful. But I also got the little setting spray because I forgot to bring mine. And it sets fine, but it makes everything so dewy. It just feels like it'll come off the second you have like an itch on your face or something happens.
My skin does the whole dewy thing just fine on its own. Same. But I don't need any help. I need a powder that's going to like keep it.
I need a powder that's like dehydrated cement and then it just sticks and it will still slide off of my oily ass face somehow. So who knows? But just a fun little for ya.
Love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you have any fun makeup stuff that you want to tell us about. We had so many messages when I was talking about the micellar water that I like. It's Garnier, I think it is. And I said, only get the one with the pink top.
Just the pink.
Not the blue, not the green. Get the one with the pink. And we got so many messages that were like, I thought I hated it because I got the blue or the green one and I love the pink one.
Yes.
So,
also, thank you. You are like a cool... Not really a cool, but if you're just like the fairest of them all, like me in terms of skin tone and nothing ever works for you, Refi has a phenomenal concealer that's like actually gray and neutral toned.
Ooh.
That's not too yellow and it's not too blue and it's not just fucking pink, because some of us are just a gray taupe that borderlines white. Okay, I can't help it, but there's no makeup in my shade range and that does it. So that's perfect. Exciting for me. But anyway, all of that to say,
hey,
hi, hello, welcome. Howdy all you cool pod party people.
Welcome back to your favorite true crime podcast.
About time for true crime. Aw.
You guys shouldn't have.
That's so sweet. I also am curious how long my salutation will get by the next few years, because I feel like I've added another element every day.
We love that.
Not only was that so sweet, so demure, so mindful, so cutesy, but hopefully, if we're not already your favorite true crime podcast, we will be someday. Like maybe today. Who knows?
Ooh.
But we are a true crime podcast where both of us hosts have a combined over 10 years of education and work in the field, and we're just besties trying to get through.
That's it.
That's it. This means that everything you hear today is researched. You always have our sources below, but also interpreted by people holding graduate and postgraduate degrees in it.
Yay.
Yay. It also means we're besties, and you get that vibe. We giggle a lot. We cope with this work by giggling, because if you're not laughing, you're crying.
If you cannot find the humor or something to laugh at in everything, this field and this genre will absolutely eat you alive.
Yep.
And we're not here to do that, babe.
No, and make no mistake, we cry about it a lot too. But we're recording, we try our best to laugh.
We usually pause if we're crying. We'll get that out and then we'll come back.
Yes.
Because
you'll hear the tears start. You'll just, yes. You won't hear them finish.
Hopefully.
So, I also like to say that we never laugh at anybody in our cases with the exception of the offenders. We will always try to laugh at an offender if we can.
Oh my God, we roast the shit out of them, as we should.
So, just a fun little tidbit there. But I bring this up in part because it's been a while, but also because last week I personally was kind of a hot mess express TM. This is an apology. This is not an apology for the case. I put my heart and soul into Chelsea's case, who we're covering today, and I hope you'll see that. But last week we were going through a little bit, and it was one of our first weeks back to recording after our break and out of the flow. But we also were very aware of the disasters happening in the southeast of the United States. Hurricane Helene, Hurricane Milton, and perhaps the upcoming Hurricane Nadine are weighing heavy on our minds here at ATFTC. Not only do we have loved ones and friends in the area, but we know so many of you are there too. So please, if you can, consider donating to a few of the causes we've linked below to help survivors and families in need of help with their health, survival, and rebuilding. Today, I'd like to highlight the greatergood.org and myamericans.org care funds, as well as the charities.org fund, all linked below for you. As part of that chaos, you may have noticed that I didn't open like normal either, in part due to the scatteredness of getting back in the flow, attempting to focus amidst the chaos, and because, in all honesty, I was just so pumped to have a real life transition story into the case, I fully forgot to bring up my sources and trigger warnings. So I'm just going to take a minute, get back to my roots, and start that way with you guys.
We're
going to
ground ourselves and we're coming back at it.
So today, for trigger warnings, we are talking about murder, we're talking about violence, we're talking about rape, we're talking about a horrendous last night for Chelsea, and we're going to talk about it, and I'll try to give you a warning before we get to the detailed parts of that too, but just so you know. We're also going to be going over a wild investigation and the highs and lows that that brings, and also just some shout outs to my sources. I used episodes from Dateline, Murder with My Husband, which, hey, love you guys, but also Kimberlea, Monroe News, CBS News, and more, and they are always linked below. Last week, too. Don't worry. So,
excellent.
Without further ado, yoo-hoo! Pods on. Skipper, stop skipping. Please. It's time. So, let's review where we left off. If you haven't listened to part one, go ahead and do that now. We'll even wait for you. Okay, hi. Oh my God, what a cliffhanger, right? Wow. For those of you who didn't have to just go back, let's give a quick recap. Last week, we met Chelsea Brook, a 22-year-old hostess at Olga's Kitchen in Mabee, Michigan, a town with less than 550 people as of 2022. Chelsea and some of her close friends that she worked with, Lauren, Becky, and her friend Penny and her sister, went to Big Mike's annual Halloween bash on October 26th of 2014, which, yes, means that the 10-year anniversary is coming up in the week of release of this episode.
Oh, wow.
Chelsea and her friends went as Batman characters or villains, and while I don't know her friends' costumes, Chelsea went as Poison Ivy in a costume that she made entirely by hand and was so incredibly proud of. The party was supposed to be big, like a couple hundred of people, and the girls had gone before without a hitch. However, this year it blew up and went viral on Facebook, resulting in attendance of like 800 to 1,000 people, potentially over 2 times the size of Chelsea's entire town population.
Which is madness.
Insane. Because this is also on one guy's plot of land, mind you. Like, this is not an event hosted by a company or at a stadium or in a giant, like, festival field. This is just a guy's home.
Maybe it's the anxious homeowner in me now, but, like, what did that do to his plumbing?
Oh my god, seriously.
Like, you have 1,000 people. I'm sure a lot of the guys just, like, went in the woods, but, like, drunk girls have to pee constantly. And if you've got one bathroom, how many flushes was that? I just need to know.
Yeah, give us the water bill numbers.
Like, that's crazy to me.
But Chelsea didn't have pockets and left her phone with her friends, who she eventually got split up from. We have a variety of accounts of Chelsea losing her friends, losing rides without any company or a phone to call from. Big Mike, who threw the party, was investigated thoroughly and released with no evidence or suspicion from police. Rumors of trafficking and even human sacrifice were diligently checked off the investigative theories by officers and detectives from the Monroe County Police Department. However, due to the town's small size and the media's coverage, there were many people covering the case and a hefty reward now available. I believe up to like $30,000 for information that led to an arrest.
Oh, wow.
Ultimately, the police were able to track down 3 important witnesses to know about. One was Gavin Hewlett, who said he found Chelsea crying around 1 a.m. and let her borrow his phone to be a good guy and help. The second, Heather, who I believe was a stranger. I don't think this was her friend Heather from the kitchen, but Heather saw her crying and asking for rides in the parking lot around 2:45 a.m.
Poor thing.
And lastly, the police tracked down the merch guy, a man selling t-shirts and other band accessories from the music lineup of somewhere between 8 to 10 heavy metal bands throughout the night. The merch guy identified Chelsea and stated that she left with a mystery man around 3 a.m. that night. She didn't look flirty and excited to leave, but she also didn't look upset or scared. He was able to help a sketch artist put out a sketch, but a Halloween party mixed with a metal concert can be a hard place to identify specifics about people, as you might imagine. The resulting sketch ended up looking like the most stereotypical heavy metal listener of the age, with a long boy's cut that has forehead or slight eye coverage bangs, small and black rectangular glasses with stubble and a black hoodie. So,
and we have this photo on our Instagram page from part one.
Yes.
Of this, but he looks like every like guy who was older than Justin Bieber but still tried to copy his haircut.
Yes.
Guy from the 2000s, I think you know what I mean.
Yes.
Which pretty much looked like everybody around that time, and especially you're considering it as everyone's dressed up as somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Madness. And
he had like the glasses, so there's nothing discernible about him from this sketch, you know?
No, and like you could add a beard, you could take all the facial hair away, you could make it just a mustache or something. That is so easy to change.
Oh yeah.
That if I'm him and that picture of me is going around, I am going to shave that
right
that facial hair right away.
Also, not for nothing, but like you'll see, the sketch really was really kind to him.
Oh.
It was very kind to him.
So. Okay. I can't wait to roast him.
So not long after this,
we get to meet him this episode, right? We do find out who did it, right?
Yes. It is not a cold case.
Thank God.
So not long after this, Chelsea's family held a vigil for her. Many people showed up and so many loved ones talked. Of course, including Leanda, Chelsea's mom, and Cassandra, Chelsea's sister, but even her elementary school bus driver and neighbors she might not have even remembered having. People walked away, obviously remembering Chelsea and having this as a reminder that she still wasn't with them, but everybody in that town started wearing purple, which was Chelsea's favorite color, as like a reminder that this isn't done yet. She's not with us yet. And I think that was very beautiful and sentimental, but also such a strong, almost, and I apologize because there's not really a better way to say this, but almost like a marketing technique of like, remember this, like this is not done. This is a reminder for you that like we are still in the midst of this chaos.
Yeah, it's a visual reminder of all of that. And could you remind me how long it's been?
At this point, it's been a few weeks.
Okay, so we're not, at this point probably looking for her alive.
Correct.
And that's probably started to sink in.
It really has.
That it's not really rescue, it's recovery.
And I think that especially with Chelsea and just who she was this kind and caring and sweet, lovable, like family girl. She loved her animals and her people and her little life. And I think her family had really started to identify that, like, this isn't just her not wanting to come home hungover. This isn't her just like going off and doing something silly, goofy, spontaneous and coming back the next week, you know?
Yeah.
So shortly after, the bank that Leanda had worked for years offered a space for her to conduct the search out of. So they were able to move off of Big Mike's front yard and into an empty bank that basically was only being used for the ATM for their headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
So Leanda and Cassandra were able to set up shop for the search in the bank now. And hundreds of volunteers were there to help start searching, strategizing, and coming up with new ideas for how to find Chelsea. And while Chelsea's family was hard at work, the police department in Monroe County was hard at work too. Unable to say much until it checked out, they had their fingers crossed for a woman who came forward, Carrie Ann Carr, who they thought might actually have a very promising lead. See, Carrie came in frantic and urgent that they arrest her boyfriend, who earlier held her at knife point with his pocket knife and threatened her. Her story was a little shaky, but she said that he had grabbed her and the boyfriend said something like, "I used this on Chelsea. Don't make me use it on you too," holding his pocket knife up to her.
Oh, that's terrifying.
And so Carrie had gone into the police department. And of course, she was adamant that they arrest him. She was like, "Arrest him. Don't release him. Like, let it go to trial first. But I live in the same neighborhood and so does my kid. If he gets this back to us, like, he's going to hurt us."
Mm-hmm.
Like, don't do that. So the police bring in her boyfriend and they're like, "Hey, we have some questions." And before they get too far into it, the boyfriend goes, "Hold up. I'm happy to answer anything, but just so you know, I have this crazy ex-girlfriend and we are on and off again, but we are off right now. And she is trying to retaliate at me for breaking up with her. So I don't know if you know her. Her name is Carrie. I'm stressed."
Okay.
And he ends up telling the police basically everything they ask, but it gets checked out and ultimately they let him go.
Because it's confirmed?
It's confirmed that it's a lie.
Oh, so I hate
Carrie
that.
Then gets arrested and charged with lying to police and, in my opinion, probably interfering with an investigation.
Yeah, that's pretty messed up.
It's pretty messy. Yeah.
And also, see, and that's the thing, we say it every time, it's that for every person who comes forward and lies about a crime having happened to them, you make it so much more difficult for those who have experienced that to come forward because right. they're less likely to be believed now. And, you know,
right. And now,
I just hate that.
A woman who's in an on and off again relationship who was held at knife point and tells the police, at least these officers are like, "Okay, we've been here before.
We've heard this before, and it was bullshit." So when he says, "Well, no, she's just lying," they'll be like, "Yeah, well,
all right,
that's what it was last time." You know, yeah. And that's not a good way to go about things. Every case needs to be different, but you can't help that people are going to look at history and use history to predict the future.
Right, because everybody thinks their experience is ubiquitous. You know what I mean?
So, okay.
So,
not a fan of her.
Not great. The next lead that investigators got came from a different man. This man's name was Harlan Bird. And I believe that they got a hint from a friend that said Harlan was talking to like their friend group or whatever and said that he saved Chelsea that night. And so they called the police and they're like, "You should talk to him. Like, I think he knows something." And so they bring him in and Harlan was like, "Wait, actually, okay, yes, no, I do remember Chelsea. I saw her crying at the party and there were two men that were giving her a hard time. So I stepped in between them. I was really heroic and they got really angry and took off. So I stayed with Chelsea like a good guy and I made sure she was okay and that she was doing all right. And then I left."
Okay, he sounds like a fan of himself.
Mm-hmm. And as police investigated this claim, they found less and less evidence to suggest it. So they start pressing him. They're like, "Who are the guys? What do they look like? You know, what's going on?
How was it that they were giving her a hard time?
Right.
What did that look like?"
And so as they start to sort of put the pressure on these questions, Harlan goes, okay, I'm so sorry. Like, wait, I made it up. I don't know why. I just was saying it to my friends and then they told you and now here we are, but it's not true.
Okay.
And I don't know why this was the case. He did also get a charge of lying to police and likely interfering with an investigation.
So we have two arrests made so far in connection to this case, and neither of them are responsible for Chelsea being missing.
Correct. And neither of them even fucking knew Chelsea.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's where we're at.
Great.
And I don't know if he was doing this for the $30,000 reward. Maybe. It seems vague enough that, like, if somebody was arrested, he could be like, yeah, that was the guy. But other than that, if he was really just telling his friends and he didn't go to the police first, it seems like maybe he's just kind of an ego chaser. Kind of a
douche, but not being illegal about it.
Right. And also, like, he attempted to stick with his story, which maybe says something for loyalty, but not for loyalty to the truth.
So. No. Did I just say being illegal about it?
Yeah.
Wow.
And I like that.
This is a Sunday morning here. you heard it here first, kids.
But wow. Then something else happened. With all of the false allegations and confessions that were happening, time was still passing. Time passed Thanksgiving, and then Christmas, and then New Year's, and even Valentine's Day.
Aww.
It passed what would have been Chelsea's 23rd birthday on January 28th that year. But fast forward to weeks from then, something else entirely mundane happened. On March 22nd, 2015, a woman named Cheryl Retliff was cleaning her yard after winter. She had like 3.5 acres of land, primarily farmland, I assume, but partially wooded. And every spring, she had this dang long road that she had to clear out.
Mm-hmm.
Every fucking time. It was probably a buildup of snow and ice and mud and crap that people throw on the ground while driving. And by the way, if I see you litter, I'm coming for you. It's not okay. But Cheryl got to work on her annual project. And while cleaning up that spring, she had found a red Mary Jane flat and threw it in her trash bag with everything else. Cheryl's husband came home and he did his usual work was good. What'd you find today, hon? And she told him. And initially, Cheryl hadn't really thought anything of it. She found all sorts of shit in this road. You know what I mean?
Right.
And it's an annual project. So it's like, oh, what did the winter bring in this year?
Exactly.
But she told him, and because there are missing flyers of Chelsea everywhere, it rang a bell in her husband's head. And he goes, wait, what if it was hers?
Good on him.
And he didn't even have to say her name. Cheryl knew exactly what he was talking about, and they decided to call the police. It was good that they decided to do this, because after all, Big Mike's property wasn't even 2.5 miles down the road.
Oh, okay.
The couple did call the police, who collected the shoe as partial evidence, and they were at least able to confirm that it was Chelsea's. And while there were tons of loaded questions, like, why was the shoe here? Where's the rest of her clothing? How did it get here? Is she on the land? They ultimately searched and found nothing else that led to Chelsea. Then, like a week later, a man named Eric Kassab and some of his friends were going to look for scrap metal. Don't knock it till you try it. So I can't knock it, but it sounds boring.
Also, depending on where you do it, illegal.
True. I imagine people do this for extra money or to see if they can source materials for jobs without paying. But regardless, Eric and his friends were by a railroad like 10 miles away from Big Mike's house. And he was near this abandoned industrial street on Peters Road in Michigan. Eric had found a rotting piece of plywood and thought he saw something like under a plant underneath it. So he moves this plywood and he's like, okay. Weird. This plant looks like it's fake. And then when he moved the plant, he noticed it actually wasn't a plant at all, but a leotard with sewn leaves on it.
I knew it. God damn it.
And then when he moved that to see what was underneath it, he found a red wig. And this freaked Eric out and his friends. They initially thought about keeping it because his friend was like, that's kind of a sick costume, bro. But ultimately, they left it there.
He's just going to put it on with heels later. He's like, ooh, yep. He's like, really cool. Brings out my eyes.
He said, it's great for the tuchus. But they leave it there because they're like, you know, it's not ours. We don't need it. It's kind of trash under rotting wood. Like, whatever. But a week or so after that.
But wouldn't they have remembered, hey, this girl was last seen wearing exactly what you just found?
You know, you'd think. But it really happened a week later because Eric was at work and he saw a missing persons poster for Chelsea, and the math started mathing.
Okay.
He was like, oh shit, I think that's her stuff. Like, this is the exact wig I found. Like, this looks like her costume, although hey, it's ratty and trashy now, but like, this looks like it. And he starts putting these things together, but he also starts putting together all of the things he's seen from NCIS and SVU and Criminal Minds. And he says, I know about DNA, and now my DNA is on that. And yeah, I do not want to be DNA, a suspect.
My ass. I hate that.
So he tries to forget it. And he tries and he tries until a week after. So this is Easter Day, Easter Sunday. And at Easter brunch, he talks to his sister. He's like, look, I found this. I'm like really chewing on it. I'm trying to forget it. I didn't do anything, but like, I don't know what to do. And his sister, to her credit, was like, no shit. You have to tell the police. Like, it's not a question. Oh, you good. Do or
somebody,
I do.
Somebody was thinking here. Oh, okay. Good.
And to his credit, he goes, okay, yeah. All right. So he calls the police. And the police say, hey, thanks. Let's get directions and go investigate. So these police officers all had their Easter afternoons ruined because Eric waited 2 weeks and then had to call that day.
What a douche.
Which, like, don't get me wrong. I'm glad that you called, and I'm glad that they went out to investigate and did their jobs and they signed up for that job. But also, like, a little consideration would be nice.
Well, it's not even, I mean, it is their job. So consideration for the cops, sure. But worse for Chelsea's family, because they had to wait an extra 2 weeks to get vital information about where Chelsea was or anything relating to her case.
Right.
For absolutely no reason. And I can understand, like, oh, DNA, whatever. But like, then you have to be open and honest about that. That isn't an excuse. Like, I can understand why that might be a deterrent for you, but it is not enough of a reason for you
to not call it in at all.
Prevent that information getting out, because it absolutely has to.
Right. And ultimately, in my opinion, if you know enough about DNA, you know it's not going anywhere. It's already on there. So it looks more suspicious if you say, no, I don't want to do anything with that, than saying, hey, I saw this and I picked it up and then I saw this poster and oh my God, I think it's hers.
That's what I think.
So ultimately, Eric finishes his Easter brunch and he hangs out with his family. But then right around dinner time, the police say, hey, yo, kind of weird and super sus that you waited this long, bro. We're going to have you come in for questioning.
Isn't it kind of weird and super sus, bro?
It is. And so they bring him in. They're like, did you have anything to do with this? And Eric adamantly denies. So the police think he's lying. And they're like, listen, okay, tell us this. Did you go to the party? Yes. Eric says, absolutely not. Oh. I did not go to the party, but I do have an ex that lives over there. And I went to go see her that night.
Okay, so he was in the area that night.
Right. And then they found out that his ex lives on the exact same road that Cheryl Retliff lived on.
Ooh.
Which is just kind of weird. And so Eric says, look, I didn't do anything. I was with my daughter the whole weekend. Like, you can ask her mother. He gives them his DNA and his fingerprints, and there was nothing really else they could do. But the police are also making another connection. Because do you remember a few moments ago we talked about Harlan Byrd, who faked heroism and later denied?
Yeah.
Well, they realized that this industrial yard, this railroad, this is all kind of like the same spot where they found the costume. So this abandoned industrial complex with the railroad is like 100 yards away from where Harlan lives with his grandmother.
So this is all so close.
Yeah, that's less than half a mile for people who think in miles like me. And would be like a 10-minute walk going slow,
mm-hmm.
You know? And so they bring him in again. And this time he brought a lawyer, like a good boy. That's a good thing to do. And he said, look, no clue. It wasn't me. I have been to the building before, though. He said, so unless someone is trying to set me up, and I don't know why they'd try to frame me, but if they were, that's the only thing I can think of. I have no idea how that got there. I can't explain it to you. Like, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And so the police, again, kind of hit the standstill, but they're like, hold up. We want a DNA sample and we want a polygraph. So he gives them the sample and he passes the polygraph and they have to let him go. The police had also sent in the leotard for testing and hoped to find some DNA from some brown stains that were on the leotard, thinking maybe it was blood or something. Like, it didn't look like a byproduct of sitting in this abandoned industrial complex. Yeah. You know what I mean? But the leotard straps were also twisted and pulled and like stretched until they were broken off of the body of the leotard.
Oh, okay.
And then also there was an area in the crotch that had been like entirely ripped and removed.
Oh, no.
It seemed notable that Chelsea very likely wasn't behind this, not only from the hours upon hours of labor she put into it and hand making her own costume she was so proud of, but also because this was all forced. And if she wanted to, she could have just taken it off.
Mm-hmm.
Move the straps down.
Yeah. So, and she would have likely done that when she was home.
Right.
And not in the middle of God knows where.
Right. And remember, Chelsea comes from a very faith-based background. I doubt that this was something that would have been like a one-night stand. That doesn't seem like her character. But even if it was, that's not usually the kind of thing that you're like, hold on, yeah, I want you to ruin this thing I put in this many hours of hard work on.
And probably not in this abandoned industrial space.
Yeah, it's not very romantic.
No.
But police were becoming increasingly worried that she was violated in more ways than one, and she didn't want any of them. It should be noted, the police would have absolutely had none of these leads if it wasn't for Cassandra and Leanda. Leanda, at 52, was working 4 days a week for months to print missing persons flyers for Chelsea. Local businesses were donating paper for the prints. The bank donated the space. Volunteers helped post and mail out flyers. Local pizza places were even including flyers with every box they sent out.
That's just a mom. That is just a mom who wants her kid back.
And in those 6 months between October and March, Leanda, and this was from a news article, had printed over 1 million flyers to bring awareness to this. And I believe at the time they were in almost every single state.
Incredible.
Incredible.
A mother's love.
And without these, Eric and Cheryl might have never even known to come forward with what they found, let alone where to come forward with it. So I strongly believe that all of this was due to this hard work. You know what I mean? Like, none of that was fruitless.
Oh, I hope that offers her some kind of closure.
I hope so. And her family really was starting to swallow that Chelsea was probably not going to come home the girl she was, or even possibly alive. Chelsea had two sisters getting married that year, and she was supposed to be in both of the weddings. She had been so excited, but her absence was starting to tell a much more sinister story than a girl who just didn't want to come home after a party. A little less than a month later, on April 24th, 2015, a local man named John Maron, or Maron, M-A-R-O-N, was doing some work. He had a really heavily wooded plot of land, like 13 acres worth, and he was trying to do some construction on his lot. He was trying to like bulldoze a path so he could build a house. His property was by a different set of train tracks, so not the ones by the industrial park, but a different set.
Okay.
And it was on Briar Hill Road in Ashe Township in Monroe County. John's land was like 7 miles away from Big Mike's and like 6 miles away from the railroad where Chelsea's costume was found. So pretty in the middle. John and his friends were bulldozing the land, and he was on the phone with his wife while he's like trying to squeeze this bulldozer through some fucking trees, oh, you know? Geez. And he gets stuck in the mud. And so he gets out to take a look. He like goes around the machine. I don't even know what to call it because it's not like a car. You know what I mean? But he goes around this machine and he immediately knows something isn't right. He hangs up on his wife and he calls 911 and he says, I just found a skeleton on my property.
Oh, that's terrifying.
He said, I think it's got blonde hair. It might be the girl who's all over the place.
Oh, wow.
I don't know. Crime investigation technicians come out to John's land and they find nearly entirely skeletal remains. Like, this is a severely decomposed human being. The remains are sent to the medical examiner's office, and while, of course, they were hoping that it wouldn't be Chelsea, detectives personally told Chelsea's family just in case. They said, hey, it could be, we don't know. These remains don't even have a face. Like, they can't identify her immediately. But the media had been so aggressive with this case that they were like, even on the in case, we want you to know from us first.
Honestly, that speaks to, I think, you know, caring about the family and, and wanting them to hear it the right way, but also how sometimes the media can be like vultures, even if sometimes even if it isn't true, even if it just looks it.
Right.
You know, because it sells. And that's awful that they had to be like, we have no reason to concern you yet until we know. But because we're afraid that you will end up being provoked and concerned from others.
Yeah.
We would rather you hear the actual facts from us before you read some, you know, embellished version of it elsewhere.
Right.
In like, you know, 2 hours.
The hard part of this was that ultimately the medical examiner's office was able to confirm it was Chelsea, but they had to use her dental records.
That is heartbreaking.
There was no other way to confirm. So a quick trigger warning here. This is going to be kind of graphic and perhaps brutal to hear, but the autopsy revealed a few other awful facts about Chelsea's death too. The first was that this was confirmed a homicide and that they had determined Chelsea's official cause of death was blunt force trauma to the head.
Oh.
Other findings of note did include that Chelsea's jaw was broken into two pieces.
Oh.
And that she had multiple fractures and bone breaks around her face as a whole, but including both of the areas around her eyes. I think that's the zygomatic arch or something.
So she was just beaten to death, basically.
Essentially.
Oh.
But because of how decomposed her body was by the time they found it, there was literally no DNA or even trace DNA they could find.
Oh, no.
At John's home, where Chelsea's body was found, investigators also found a single artificial leaf on the ground next to her that matched the ones from her leotard. And they found a pair of leggings. But it looked like she'd been haphazardly covered with some twigs and leaves from nearby. And because she wasn't identifiable from any of her remains, this pair of green leggings and the leaf were like really the connection. But shortly after, they also found her other red Mary Jane flat that matched the one found on Cheryl Retliff's land.
Oh, wow.
They were able to confirm Chelsea's blood and a male's DNA on her leotard. But they weren't sure about the leggings. Mm-hmm. There wasn't really much in way of that. But
so this stuff is like spread out.
Yes. This is over miles. She had a shoe on one person's property, her leotard in an entirely different location, and now leggings and another shoe
next to her body in a third location.
In a third. And none of this was Big Mike's, which would have been the fourth.
Oh, jeez.
Obviously, they send out all of this to get tested for DNA and anything they can find from it, from the forensics team. And what was incredibly positive news for Harlan Byrd and Eric Kassab was awful news for Chelsea's loved ones and investigators. There was no match. The DNA matched nobody in their system. The DNA matched none of their suspects.
Good and bad.
Right. Right. So they have it, but they don't know who. And there's nowhere they can go with it right now because there's no other leads for suspects. The two they had were just cleared. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's not related to the other arrests also involved in the case.
Or other arrests in the county at all right now.
Oh,
at least no one they had DNA on. And so all the investigators could do was wait long enough to hope that they find DNA that does match. Find new people, see if there were other DNA pools they could compare it to, send it out to other states or something, but just nothing. In the meantime, Chelsea's family was at least able to bring her home and lay her to rest. Foley, I did cry seeing her headstone, but it has her name with beloved daughter on the bottom. Aww. And they also engraved a little cat and an anchor on it.
Aww.
And the anchor is like the tattoo that she had. And she was such an animal lover, so that just feels right. Her family put out a statement that thanked everyone for finding and bringing Chelsea home as intended. And while this is devastating news, no doubt, Chelsea's family said they could at least find some relief in knowing that Chelsea was in heaven with their heavenly father, and they put everything into God's hands. It also meant that Leanda could go back to work at the bank, and that they were able to finally put away a basket of clean folded clothes that they had sitting in Chelsea's room. But my heart aches for Chelsea's family. I don't know this pain, and I can only imagine the impact that a tireless search for months after your daughter's disappearance resulted in knowing the horrendous things that happened to her. I also can't imagine what your brain does to you before you know these things.
It's like her family probably already thought of every horrible way her life could have ended in the search for her. And then just to have it confirmed that one of those horrible scenarios that you considered was the one that happened.
Gut-wrenching.
Concretely, just to know that, I can't imagine. And this sounds like, I don't know, but it seems like one of those situations that always gets me the most is that by the time somebody noticed she was missing, she was already dead. Those always get me, because everything else for that isn't for nothing, but it doesn't impact.
Right.
It doesn't make any major changes that could bring your loved one back. It's just that she was taken so quickly.
Yeah.
That by the time you actually noticed and there was, I guess, worthy of panic at that point, already gone. That just rips my heart out every time.
Right. Well, and this is so awful in my head, because not only do you have this months of search like you're talking about, you're imagining all of these ways, you get this awful news that you're right.
Mm-hmm.
So somewhere in there, you know, this is a scenario that's been thought of. You're right. And your work had no control over her well-being. But also, they know what happened, but they still don't know why or who did it. Just, yep, yeah, no, your anxiety and your deepest fears were right. Have a good day.
So you can lay her to rest, but you can't rest because the person who did it is still out there and could still be among you. You're in a town of, what, 500 people?
Right. So they don't get another clue for over a year.
Oh, come on.
Yeah. This is April. So Mother's Day comes, Mother's Day goes. Father's Day comes, Father's Day goes. Both of her sisters' weddings have happened. They have another Halloween, another Thanksgiving, another Christmas, another New Year's, another Chelsea's birthday. Until July 21st of 2016. Nearly 2 years after Chelsea's disappearance and well over a year from when they found her, the case went from cold to burning hot, baby.
Ooh, okay.
Daniel Clay, a local 27-year-old, also grew up in Monroe County. Mm. He was adopted as a baby. His mother was in prison when she birthed him, so he was immediately put up for adoption.
Mm.
And he was adopted as a baby. But a few years later, Daniel's adoptive parents got divorced when he was about 5. So Daniel ends up living with his adoptive father. And unfortunately, you fast forward a few years and Daniel's like 17 now. Well, Daniel's adoptive father died.
Oh.
So now he has nowhere to go. And unfortunately, with just a little while until Daniel turns 18, he's put into a children's home.
Just for a matter of months, really, right?
Probably.
before he ages out at 18. And
yeah,
that's awful.
So Daniel had turned to drugs in his teen years, and although it's unclear if that was only after his adoptive father died or not, he got into a lot of trouble. And at 18, still doing drugs, he would job and couch hop as long as people would let him stay, but it was never for that long. He eventually got a girlfriend pregnant, but wanted nothing to do with the child, which resulted in him not paying child support and continued to collect warrants for not paying said child support.
Amazing. Good guy. Great guy.
But he also had other warrants, yes, for not paying the child support, but also theft and sexual misconduct, obstruction of justice, drug charges, and most recently, in the May of 2016, he was given another charge of larceny for stealing someone's backpack.
Nice.
However, it was due to a new law passed just before May that Daniel was able to be booked for this larceny.
And he took DNA?
Yes. He never spent a night in jail, but this law granted investigators, to collect DNA samples for misdemeanors as well as felonies, which was not the case before.
So his DNA had never been taken before, and now that it is, and they can cross-reference that. So it probably sent like a big ding.
Sure did. So lo and behold, a few weeks after they collect this DNA and it's processed, put into the system, and ran against everything, it pops up and matches Chelsea's costume.
Oh, it gets so fucked.
So come July 22nd, 2016, the Monroe County Police Department arrests Daniel. But not for the DNA match. This was accumulation of all of the child support that he didn't pay. And they said, we're finally taking you in. So they bring Buddy Boy in, and he's under the impression that it's just for this child support charge, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the investigators begin to ask Daniel, yes, about that, but then they move a little. They're like, hey, do you remember this party like a few years ago?
I know it's probably like not been on your mind and no one's really talking about it, but do you remember where that girl went missing and then she was killed? Do you remember that?
Well, and he said, listen, like, yeah, I went to the party, but I didn't really stay that long. And they said, yeah. You remember Chelsea, though, right? And he goes, oh, my gosh, yes. Like, of course, I know who you're talking about. Her flyers are everywhere. But no, I didn't know her.
Mm.
And Daniel also gets started telling the police throughout the questioning that he's quite the ladies' man.
Oh, my God.
He knows a lot of girls. Okay, just not Chelsea, but he knows a lot of girls. And though he's not your average shooter, no, he has two kids with two women, and he's a real champ because he's got a third on the way.
Wow. And he doesn't take care of any of them. What a piece of shit.
No, he doesn't. He lives like the 70s, baby. Free love.
Ugh.
Yeah, he says peace and love, baby. That's me.
Yeah, looking at the pictures of him, he can keep all of his peace and all of his love.
Oh yeah, we don't want any of that peace near us. Thank you. The detectives in this case do such a good job of keeping him talking. They're asking priming questions, getting him comfortable, and they're like feeding into this. They're like, oh my God, I wish I was a ladies' man. What's that like? You know what I mean? Like, they're just doing all of this feeding into this ego.
Mm-hmm.
And
I love when they do that though, because these, I don't know if they're narcissists, whatever you want to call, whatever category they fall into, but like when the cops kind of stroke the ego of these guys who just really think they are the bee's knees.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they sit up straighter, like they puff their chest a little bit. They are feeling so confident that they really let their guard down.
Yep. And it works because these police are like, hey, totally hear you. Super jealous. Love what you're doing with the place. We are curious, though, is there any reason that your DNA would be on her? Because we have it on her. And we're just curious if you know why.
Because, like, I mean, you've been with, like, every woman. Every woman. So maybe you even forgot about this one.
Right. And so he says, no, I don't think so. But actually, now that you mention it, I did meet a different girl there.
Uh-huh.
And we had like a quickie in the backseat of the car, right? But then we went our separate ways, and I don't think it was Chelsea, but if it happened to be her, like, Sorry, I didn't think it was her.
Romance.
Love. Really.
Free.
So here's the thing, though, because the DNA the detectives found wasn't semen, like dipshit thought it was. So it didn't really fucking matter if he had a bang in the back of his car, because the DNA they found was actually skin cells that they found on the areas that her leotard was ripped.
Like he was the one that ripped it.
Correct.
Cool.
Yeah. And Daniel's now spinning, right? He's like, oh, fuck. Like, I can't find a way to make that make sense with the story I told. The detectives go, hold up, dude. No. Here's the thing. Like, tell us the truth because, look, we don't think you're a murderer. And the detectives lie because they can do that. And they say, hey, between you and us, like, the only thing we know and her mom knows that nobody else knows is that Chelsea has a rare disease. It's called frail bone disease, which means that, like, the slightest tap, her bones just break. Like, it's not your, like, you didn't know. Like, we think something happened, but we think it was an accident.
Frail bone disease. I think mm-hmm. that really does exist, but she didn't have that.
No, she sure didn't.
And I don't think it's called that.
Yeah, right. And so, like, it was an accident, right? So, like, what happened? And Daniel goes, oh my gosh, thank God you said that. I had no idea. There was a second time that we had sex. See, like, yeah, we did. We, like, boned and then we went our separate ways. But later I was driving home and I saw her walking down the road, like, carrying her wig, you know? And he says that, hey, babe, need a ride. He, like, pulls over. He, like, gestures for her to come in, right?
He's so romantic.
And he says she hops in. But she's belligerently drunk and belligerently horny and says that she wants rough sex. So Daniel, much the giver, obliged.
Ugh.
He said she went crazy, though. She was biting him and smacking him and begging for him to choke her. Mm. So he does. He says, look, I'm a ladies' man, okay? It was only a few seconds, and I know how to do it. I've had other girlfriends who asked to be choked, okay? And they were all fine. But after just a few seconds, she just went limp. And he said, I tried CPR, but I didn't know how to do it. And so I panicked, and I took her out to the woods. Sorry.
I hate him.
Sorry.
She begged to be killed. Is that what it is? Okay.
Mm-hmm. And detectives think something set him off. They think that he was either watching and waiting for the right victim, or maybe she did ask for a ride, but she made the mistake of getting in his car. They arrest him for her murder, but before it even gets out, Chelsea's friend Becky knows.
Hmm.
Yeah, because another employee of Olga's kitchen, Jessica, told her. And Jessica knew because it turns out she was one of the mothers of one of Daniel's kids that he didn't pay for.
Oh.
And she was the only person he called when he got booked and he left voicemails. He said, hey, babe, fucked up real hard. I'm going to be gone for a while.
Okay.
Yeah. So she's sobbing and she tells Becky, she's like, I think my son's father killed Chelsea and I am so sorry.
Oh.
It's not like it's her fault. She didn't know.
But then it's just out now.
Yep.
Before, I'm assuming before Chelsea's parents have been spoken to.
I believe so. I don't know if Becky told them or if she waited for detectives to, but they did eventually find out. And when the police later questioned Jessica, she also said she remembered him coming up to a group that her and Chelsea were talking in at the party. Like, they were all hanging out. They were all talking. She didn't remember about what, and then she remembered seeing Chelsea at like 1:30, which we knew, and we know from other accounts that she was still there until about 2:45, and she was alone and crying. So this meant this fucker probably waited.
Tell me he gets the chair.
I can't. But I can tell you that in May of 2017, Daniel Clay went to trial for the murder of Chelsea Brooke. He pled guilty to accidental death. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And despite how often it definitely works for a ton of people, he did lose the case in defending himself.
Thank God.
Yeah. He was found guilty of first-degree murder and hiding a body. And I mean, he did get a court appointed attorney later, but it was like a 10-day trial. And he did try to represent himself first.
Oh, I love when they do that.
I know. It was great. And the jury only deliberated for like 3 hours before coming back. But here are some highlights to include from the trial. Daniel claims her facial bones being fractured was from carrying her in the woods. He said, I was freaked out and I couldn't carry her, so I dropped her a bunch of times.
I don't think so.
I love that his defense is, I was pumped up on adrenaline and I'm just weak.
Right? Yeah, right.
He also says that he choked her, all right? But like we know from Grace Mullane, in that case, he would have had to continue to choke her for like 2 minutes after she lost consciousness for that to kill her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And not only that, which, by the way, I love when prosecutors put on a show. I really do. They brought in a mannequin and choked it for as long as he would have had to kill her.
God.
Right? So just to show them, like, that's not an accidental whoopsies kind of thing. But
you can't do it count to three and oops, I didn't know what I did. Right? Oh, it went so fast. It's minutes.
It's minutes. And it's minutes after she's unconscious. But the kicker in it, that's not what killed her. Blunt force trauma to the head killed her.
Okay.
So that doesn't really matter even. I mean, it does, but it doesn't in this case. And in recap, Daniel Clay doesn't understand science, honesty, or women. Period.
You know, that's right.
I am so happy to report that the judge, Daniel S. White, said to the courtroom something phenomenal that I think really sums up Daniel Clay. To Daniel, he says, "It is very clear to me, Mr. Clay, you are a liar, you are a rapist, and you are a killer."
Oh, shit.
And he gave that bitch an LWAP, baby.
He did?
LWAP. Life without parole.
Thank
ever.
God.
I know. I'm so happy. Not as happy, though. It should also be reported, this has been appealed and the court upheld the decision, meaning it didn't do shit and the court said, nah, retweet, you a liar, you a rapist, you a killer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But less exciting, Daniel was also found guilty of forced intercourse on a separate woman whose house he broke into before forcing himself on her in 2016 after Chelsea.
So there could be people before Chelsea, too.
There are almost certainly people before Chelsea.
And he was only 27 when he got arrested. Yeah. So he was 25 when he did it.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh.
And then he got an additional 40 to 75 years sentence on top.
Shit.
Which, good. He deserves it.
Oh, absolutely. But shit.
So obviously nobody was expecting us to land where we did. Nobody could. I want to bring our attention back to the people that matter in this case, though. Leanda, Chelsea's mom, has publicly forgiven Daniel and gave him a Bible.
She's a better person than me.
He's a real giver because he said he'd keep it. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Chelsea's family has continued to be resilient with every gut-wrenching punch that was thrown their way. They have continued to lead lives and love with their faith behind them. The last message that Leanda has frequently pushed is to come and go in the same groups. If you go to a party with two in, two out. And it needs to be the same, two out. You can add more, of course, bring people to keep them safe, but you need the same people you came with.
Yeah.
Daniel Clay is a violent felon and a serial rapist. I feel for the kid, and I know that he had a tough childhood, and he's probably hurting somewhere. But he has never in his life shown an ounce of self-restraint, empathy, or taken accountability for anything he's done. I'm sure he has plenty to work through in the life, plus maybe even 75, that I think he should serve. And I hope he tries to start. I don't know how far he'll get. And of course, Chelsea. Sweet, lovable, Doctor Who, musical, queen, animal, baking, loving Chelsea. At 22, with a good head on her shoulders, a loving family, a strong faith, Chelsea went to a party that she had gone to multiple times with good friends. Chelsea entered her last party with a plan to drive home with a DD, a safe place to lay her head, and even brought her own alcohol. She was safe. She left her phone with a friend and proceeded to have the time of her life until it soured. One by one, her friends left and left her at the party. Drunk, alone, and scared, Chelsea frantically asked for rides, used phones to call her friends, and probably even started walking home. When a man that she spoke with that night, who dated her coworker and friend, asked if she wanted a ride. And then this man brutally raped and beat Chelsea, ultimately taking her life with blunt force trauma. What he did to spread her clothes between the Retliff's property and the abandoned industrial building before barely covering her body in the woods on John Monroe's property, we will never know. Chelsea was a bright light with a huge heart. She was so loved. She was such a good friend and such a loved part of her community. I was so honored to get to share who she was with you all and so devastated that this is the reason why. But at least we can rest comfortably knowing that this asshat is at least behind bars until he dies. And even if he gets shocked back to life, likely another lifetime.
Whew.
Happy Halloween.
Oh, not happy Halloween.
No.
But incredible that this wasn't a case where 30 years went by.
Yeah.
And he got to live 30 years of his life in freedom. It shouldn't have been the 2 years that it was.
But also how incredible that they were able to really benefit off of good detective work.
Oh, yeah. They were on it in this case. And probably, it sounds like, given that it's a very small town and that they probably needed assistance and everything, they did excellent considering they probably hadn't had to deal with something like this before.
Seriously. And I think for me, the kicker of this case is the spread of the evidence.
Yeah. And they found it all.
All of that. And how did it get all of those places? I mean, truly, this investigation started with people saying she was a human sacrifice at a Halloween party.
Then they thought maybe it was human trafficking because Detroit had an issue with that. Right.
And then we get to these multiple people who lie in the police station to the point where they're getting charged and arrested.
Because they tried to accuse other people of being the one who killed her.
Right.
For their own issues. Yeah. Well, I guess the other guy didn't say somebody did. He just said,
I
saw her with other people and I was the knight in shining armor that intervened and helped and then I left.
Yep. Like, how the hell did we get from point A to point B? I don't know. And then on top of that, to have all of this evidence to do their due diligence, and this is why, right? You don't get a match that first year. Well, 14 months later, ring-a-ding-ding. Like, that would have never happened if they didn't do absolutely everything they had in their disposal to try.
Exactly.
And I think it speaks wonders to what a good community and a good investigative team can do. Because also, I fully don't believe any of this would have happened without Leanda.
No, she would made it her life's mission to make sure that everybody who could hear about it did hear about it and was knew what to look for and knew to look for her.
Seriously. And one of, actually, something that I found absolutely shocking was Cassandra, so Chelsea's sister, who also spearheaded a lot of this, her best friend also lost her sister at age 23, and her case is still cold.
Oh, my.
And it was certainly interference. Like, it was almost certainly another homicide of a 23-year-old woman in the same area.
Oh, that's awful.
Awful. But, like, incredible that they have these supports that really know what they're going through. Terrible that they know what they're going through, but like, this is a true community effort here.
No doubt, yeah.
I don't know how you go through all of that without having a best friend to say, hey, this sounds like shit, but I'm feeling whatever way because of any number of these things. You know what I mean? And to have someone go, oh, no, I've been there.
Yeah.
And I get you.
To be able to relate to that and get that, that's a friendship on a different level.
Yep.
And I also think that Leanda's right on the money. Two in, two out. Three in, three out. The same people.
And I'm fine if you go three in, five out, as long as the three out from those five are the same you went in with.
You know, I think that that's something that, of course, the girls that she went there with are not at fault for this. This isn't, you know, but you have to try to learn what you can from each scenario and say, okay, if these things were done differently, could this have impacted the end result? And if there's a chance that the answer is yes, I think that that's something to put to memory.
Right. Right. And that, you know, they are all, like Ellie said, they're all grieving. They are all in a different place, I'm sure, with what happened. But that's the thing about these small town homicides, is that you probably know who it was. And that's something that very few people can identify and face up front to say that, oh, okay, we're all hanging out with all of these people and my ex is here, but there's only 500 people in this town. So, like, of course he is. You know what I mean?
Right.
And you're not going to think about it.
And the killer was only like two layers out.
Right.
There's Chelsea, her coworker, and it was the coworker's baby daddy, basically. Yep. I mean, that's not very removed. And so we always think, well, it can't be our community. It can't be someone that we know. Oftentimes it is.
Yeah. Statistically, probably. So just a really hard, heartbreaking case. I was so drawn to it for a number of reasons, but definitely the timeliness. I mean, we're coming up on the 10-year anniversary. Deserves a little light. But also, this is the time. This is the week, the weeks of the Halloween parties that everybody's going to. And I want you guys to at least say, all right, I'm keeping my phone and I'm taking my friends.
Mm-hmm.
If nothing else. And also maybe wear some purple. Who knows?
Have a blast. This isn't to say don't go to parties or don't do anything. Of course, live your life. You can't live in fear or you're not living. However, have a conversation before you go to the party when everybody is sober and everyone can make an agreement. Mm-hmm. Hey, we'll go together. We'll stick together. Or by this time, we'll all meet up and we'll meet up over here. And keep your phone on you. Have the group chat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, share the locations for the night if you have to. Like,
right.
Do something that is probably going to take you less than 30 seconds to come up with that might actually keep you all safe that night. That to me is worth its weight in gold, and you should do it.
Right. And as adults, our version of sifting through the candy that we got in trading is sifting through the stories that we got from the party and trading. So make sure you do that when you get home, because then you say, oh, yeah, then we all just stayed up talking about how fun it was.
Yeah. And then you all made it home.
A way better ending than a 2-part series on this. You know,
it's just you gotta take what you can learn from other things that have already happened. And I don't know, I feel like it's our way of making it not for nothing.
Right.
So with that, we love you and we thank you guys for hanging out with us.
Yes. If you wanted to see the people, the places, the things, asshat, beautiful Chelsea, any of that, you can do so on our Instagram, or you could email us with your thoughts, your comments, any of those things.
Your pod pets.
Oh my gosh, yeah, the pod pets, guys. Seriously. But
please,
if you wanted to do that, you could check it out on our Instagram. You could email us. Both of those you can find below in our link tree, along with our Venmo, our PayPal, and merch from Redbubble, so that you can get a sticker or a cute little pillow if you want. But
yeah.
But with all of that being said, please don't forget to rate, review, subscribe, follow, all that good. But hopefully you do that in the next week, because if I look at my clock, that was
about time for true crime.
Bye.
Bye.
I'm Abby.
I'm Allie.
And it's about time for...
No.
Jeez. Okay.
Okay. What is that from?
School Musical.
No. Doesn't Sharpay do that? Mm-hmm. Okay, it's coming back to me.
I can't do it when I smile. No, not going well.
We gotta put the bloopers at the very end.
It's not going well.
Who?
Ma.
So you're Abby. I'm Allie. Is that where we are right now?
Somehow.
Amazing. Okay.